The Tea Health Show, your medical lifestyle podcast, brought to you by The Tea Clinic.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Mark. This is The Tea Health Show, and we are concluding our discussion on sexual dysfunction. And today we're going to focus on the different treatment modalities for this condition. So in studio with us today, Sister Elise Simpiwe, morning girls.
Morning.
And then we've asked Dante to come and help us out with chairing the discussion. Okay, so we've been talking about sexual dysfunction for the past two podcasts. We went into the causes and some of the symptoms and signs of this condition. And then last week we had a very, very interesting discussion with Timothy Kiesvetter, who's a sexologist and he in pastoral services as well as couples counseling. Sister Elise, treatment modalities, sexual dysfunction, it's not as straightforward as we would like to think, is it?
No, and I think in diagnosis phase of sexual dysfunction, one needs to establish, is it psychological, is it primary, biological, is it physical, is it...
Induced?
Is it predisposing factors, is it existing factors? There's so many things that need to be established before you can work out the treatment plan.
Good. Can I jump in here? So just picking up from what you've just said, if I have some sort of sexual dysfunction, say it's erectile dysfunction, I clearly am not going to be able to identify the symptoms or identify the issues myself. So I come to you guys. What can I expect?
Well, Dante, I think you've nailed it on the head perfectly. If you have erectile dysfunction, it's an underlying, it's a sign of an underlying condition, which needs to have a diagnosis. So your first step is talk about it with your partner, because as we said, if there's sexual difficulties, whether it's keeping your erection or maintaining your erection, or for women where there's pain, et cetera, if you do not communicate this to your partner is going to have some doubts about the relationship, about themselves. It can lead to resentment, et cetera, which leads to further sexual dysfunction and can even lead to the breakdown in a relationship. So what can you expect? Well, in our practice, we always start with the taking of a very, very detailed medical history. What are the conditions that you've had growing up in your early adulthood, in everything that has gone before you presented to us? We need to have a clear understanding of underlying conditions, chronic conditions like hypertension, cholesterol levels that are elevated and I'm on treatment for that, diabetes, how well is the diabetes controlled, any kind of psychological dysfunction and the medication that you might be taking for them, autoimmune diseases that can have a role. So that's where we start.
I think, can I go one step back? I think the first step is that you need to have the courage to go and discuss this, and then from the clinician side to reassure you and to say it will be kept confidential, but we need to understand where this comes from.
Do you find that there's more reticence from your female patients? Are they maybe a little bit shyer or difficult to talk as opposed to the males?
Absolutely. Yeah. I do think that is a big thing. On the by and by, when we go through the consultation, they will mention something and then we can act on that remark that they made.
Mm.
Yeah, Elise, I agree with you. I think women are a little bit more careful or hesitant to talk about these things. It's something that we slip into the initial consultation. I go through a lot of questions, and then suddenly there's one about sexual health, and then I go through some other questions, and you know what, there's suddenly another question about sexual health. And it's not only what they say, but how they respond to the question. You read the body language. On the guy's side, you know, but when I ask them, why are you here, the majority of them actually skirt around it a little bit. They're still hesitant to say, you know what, Mark, I can't get a hard on. You know what, it's, you know what, things in the bedroom aren't working as well as they used to. Instead of just actually naming the condition, I think one of the things that we learned last week was that sense of taboo where people don't want to talk about sex and sexual functioning. But the moment that you shine the light on it, you take the negative connotations out of a situation.
But, also,
but you have to do that in a very subtle way where they start feeling comfortable and then they opened up. Most of the women actually open up to Elise while she's busy with their pelvic examinations. They feel safer. She's a matriarchal figure. The patients start trusting her because she's busy with a very intimate examination, never mind with an intimate discussion.
Mm-hmm. True. And I think the negative feelings that Mark is trying to mention is the embarrassment to acknowledge something is wrong.
Well, I think in men especially is that whole macho thing, and that I'm not as much of a man as I used to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've established a very long time ago that a man's ego sits in how his penis is working and how big it is.
Yeah.
You know, but you will very seldom see a man standing in a group of guys around a braai place and talk about, you know, the fact that his sexual prowess is diminishing.
Mm.
Women actually, Simpiwe, Elise, you guys different. Don't talk about it at all.
We will make jokes about it. That's what we, it's a female thing to joke about it, you know, to say, oh, I need to do my homework again tonight. And actually there's deeper meaning to that. You understand what I'm trying to say? It's like open up, but you don't open up about it.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. So detailed medical history is where we start. Then a very detailed history about the medications and supplementation that people are taking. We need to understand the supplementation as well. Because someone will say, I'm taking this and that, and I'm taking iron. And suddenly you realize, okay, but there's a history of anemia which you didn't pick up in the initial medical history. And then we will go into it. Surgical history also plays an incredibly important role there. If a woman had, she would say, I had a laparoscopy or I had a scope done. Okay, why did you have a scope? Was it endometriosis? Was it polycystic ovarian disease? Was it something else that could lead, for instance, to a pain disorder, which they do not associate necessarily with a sexual dysfunction? Yes. So the detailed history and the medication history, key. And then we'll go over and we'll start asking more direct questions. In other words, for the guys, I always start with, okay, let's talk about sexual dysfunction. Are you as good as you want to be? Or are you as good as you used to be? Let's take a look. Has the libido and the sex drive changed? It's not as good as it used to be. Morning erections. Are you getting them as frequently as you used to? Are you still getting spontaneous erections? And then the last one, quality of erections. And that gives us a very good idea where we are. And then we go on, we ask that same questions for women, but we would ask, are you lubricating as well as you used to? Are you having any pain during sexual intercourse? And then we've established the baseline for sexual dysfunction. But then we start asking about, how is your mood in general? Are you starting to fluctuate in your mood? Are you anxious? Are you more irritable? Are you slightly depressed? How is your higher function, motivation, drive? Is that changing? We talk about sleep. Are you refreshed in the morning? Are you snoring? Are you sweating at nighttime? How many hours of sleep do you get? Somewhere in there we will throw, okay, score your stress levels out of 10. 10 is high, 1 is good. And Elise, in my practice, most patients would say 12.
Yeah.
They're not coping with stress, and stress is one of the biggest contributors to lower libido, which could lead to other problems. Now, with that stress, we have an increase in the incidence of hypertension and diabetes and cholesterol and weight gain, which will have an impact on sexual dysfunction.
But the medication they take for that.
And as we said, you know what, understanding the medication that they're taking and the possible side effects of these medications,
which patients are not aware of,
Really becomes incredibly important. What we've realized is, to treat sexual dysfunction, you need to have a diagnosis of a kind. And I think once we've established that, now things start becoming a little more clear and a little bit more easy. So let's say, for instance, let's take a look at the different types of sexual dysfunction. Simpiwe, can you remember them?
No.
We're talking about female or male or both?
Both. But men and women, we can basically categorize them into 4 different groups. So, the first one, Simpiwe, make notes, is interest and desire disorders. In other words, how we think about sex and how interested we are in sex. We call it the libido. Okay. Second one is arousal disorders, where you cannot get physically aroused. So the physical changes do not happen. There's not enough blood flow to the penis. The penis do not get erect. And you know what? That's an arousal disorder. For women, it's the same. There's no blood flow to the vulva. It doesn't get engorged and it doesn't swell. So they're not sensitive. They're not prepared for this. Then we have our orgasmic disorders, and that's problems with either getting to an orgasm or getting to an orgasm too soon or not getting to an orgasm at all. So, and then the last one are your pain disorders. And we see this most often in our female patients. Elise, you agree.
Yeah.
We don't often see pain disorders in guys. No. I've treated about 3 or 4 in the last year. But pain disorders in women, where it's physically uncomfortable for them to engage in any kind of sexual sexual intercourse, let's put it that way, does become an issue. So shall we break them down?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to keep it quite general. At least we'll do the disorders together for men and women instead of splitting them.
I think it's basically the same. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about low libido. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting interested in sex. So what are the most common problems there? Number one, hormonal changes. And here we're looking at, for the guys, a decrease in testosterone as they get older, or something that caused a decrease in testosterone. Mm-hmm. And just for the guys that are using steroids, et cetera, in excess, guys, this is something that you're going to be looking forward to at some point in your life. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how many guys I have in my office who are on steroids, on testosterone, and they're not using it correctly. And
they look magnificent, but they can't perform.
Yesterday I had a patient, he's 52, I've never seen a more handsome and buff guy for his age. And he was complaining, I'm just not interested in sex. I used to be a sexual animal.
Sure.
I can understand why. I almost jumped him. So me too. So did everyone else in my office. I was warned, you should go and see what's sitting in my front. Fuck. But you know what? He completely lost interest in sex because his hormone levels were so high that he was down-regulating every other system in his body. Okay, so it's hormonal fluctuations or hormonal changes. Mm-hmm. Underlying conditions, specific underlying conditions like kidney dysfunction, liver dysfunction, cancer, hypertension, diabetes. Then we also look at the psychological problems, patients with depression or anxiety, patients who suffered abuse, whether sexual or not.
Relationship.
Patients who are sitting in a relationship that's no longer working. The medications that these people are prescribed can cause this. Your antihypertensive, specifically erectile dysfunction for patients who are on your diuretic medication. A download or downgrading or lowering of libido because of your antidepressants and your anti-anxiolytics. That's your interest arousal disorder. So how do we treat this? In our practice, always first step, history, blah, blah, blah. And then we get an understanding and we send the patients for blood tests. We take a look at whether the bloods are balanced. And I think this is what people need to understand. It's not whether your hormone levels are within the normal range. It's the relationship between these different hormones. Are they in balance? Hmm. And when there's imbalances in these things, it has effects. Okay? So that's where we usually start. If it is that medication is the cause of this, we need to establish, is it a dose-related problem? So is the dose of a medication that you are taking creating some kind of interest disorder? Or do we need to completely change the medication to a different type or a different class of medication? Hormone balancing, as I say, the cornerstone of hormones for hypersexual desire disorder in both men and women is testosterone. Testosterone increases dopamine levels in the brain. It also binds to the areas in the brain that's involved in sexual stimulation. Remember, you, for instance, for guys, you cannot get sexually aroused without some kind of stimulation, whether it's physical or whether it's visual or audio or even smell. If the brain is not involved, you're not going to get the release of adrenaline, et cetera, that creates the vasodilatation, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I think that's the interest disorder. Okay. Sister Elise, do you want to tackle the arousal disorder? What are the big causes of arousal disorders? This is where the body is not responding.
Okay. I think it's actually difficult for me because I always think women. I never think.
Let's go with the women. We'll get to the men. We'll circle back.
Because of the sexual response being linear that we discussed last week, is that it's so difficult to differentiate between interest and desire and arousal. It typically goes together. But the arousal disorders in women mostly is also hormonal changes, your menopausal, premenopausal women or perimenopausal women, as well as women that's on contraceptives, which downregulate their sex hormones. And then a big thing is relationship or mental or psychological disorders, your anxiolyticums, your antidepressants, etc., etc. If there's anything that you want to add to that?
Yes, I think one of the things that we need to understand with arousal disorders, where either the penis is not working or the vagina is not responding, or the clitoris is not responding, is trauma to that area, whether it's surgery, whether it was a car accident and suddenly we're sitting with a paraplegic patient or a quadriplegic patient, patients who had treatment in the pelvic area, whether it was radiation therapy for any kind of cancer, whether nerves are damaged, whether it was chemotherapy that they've had, localized radiation, brachytherapy for the guys, radical prostatectomies. So anything that damages the nerves and all the blood tissue in that area leads to an inability for the plumbing to work.
Can I ask, are you able to help someone who is a paraplegic or a quadriplegic?
Yes, Dante, absolutely. Especially for the guys. This is actually quite easy to treat with guys. We had a paraplegic patient, phenomenal guy. He was doing Ironmans and he was an extreme sports fanatic. And then one day he was on a racetrack on a motorbike and he fell and someone rode over his neck. And he survived, but he was a quadriplegic.
Sure.
And he came into my office. He has the most gorgeous, gorgeous wife. And I'm not just talking the fact that she's really, really beautiful. But, you know what, that accident happened 5 or 6 years ago. And she has been lifting him into bed, into his wheelchair, et cetera, for the past 5 years. And I think that's so incredibly admirable. And, you know what, he's one of these guys that he was a little bit of a horn dog, and he still is a horn dog. His testosterone levels are great. It's just because of the nerve damage, you couldn't get an erection. And for guys, we have options available. Now, the first one, the easiest one, is your alprostadil kind of penile injections, where you do a small little injection with something like alprostadil, which is a vasodilator, directly into the corpus cavernosum. And lo and behold, you set the process in motion. And I tested it with him in the office. We did a test shot for him. And I walked out of the office and gave him some privacy. And 3 minutes later, I walked back in and he had a raging hard-on. And, you know, just the look on his face that he feels that he actually has the sensation that he's hard. And, you know, all he wants to do is, after 6 years, be intimate with his wife again. Sure. So there is medication available for that. There's also surgical options available. And Sister Elise has done some of these procedures as a scrub nurse with some of the urogynes. Elise, do you want to tell a little bit more about the implants?
The penile implants, but I have to just reiterate that this is the last resort before you need to go through all the other options before you go for a penile implant, because it's not reversible. And if the implant is there, it is there forever. Or it not forever, it is a lifetime of about 15 years.
And then can you have it replaced?
You can replace it, absolutely.
Is that a fairly painful procedure?
I haven't had one, but...
so the strap-on is not for sale.
No. I believe for about 2 weeks after the surgery, it is really painful.
But remember, if you have a paraplegic, they don't experience pain. Yeah. So for them, this is a brilliant, brilliant option.
Wow. Yeah.
Explain to us exactly how it works.
Okay, so it comes in three parts. It's got, or four parts. It's got two cylinders, because remember, the penis has got two sponges canal channels, which they destroy or dilate to make space for the two cylinders.
So you actually get a little bit of a bigger penis as well.
Exactly. It does increase girth, and it, to a lesser degree length, but it does increase girth. And then you have another part, which is a reservoir, where there is salt water or saline, as we call it. And then you have another part, which is a little pump. The reservoir usually goes into the pelvic area. The little pump goes into the scrotum, and then the two cylinders in the penis. And then you just activate the pump, or you press the pump, and it sucks the saline out of the reservoir into the two cylinders. And then you have a release valve after intercourse that it will deflate after that. Then you have another tip type, which is the malleable penile implants. This is not as popular because you sit with a semi-erect penis all the time. Or you sort of bend it away to not be that obvious.
So it's basically like some kind of moldable sponge almost.
Yeah, it's not a sponge. It's a silicone tube basically, but it's moldable.
So like a dildo that you can bend.
Yes, like that. And it's a more cost-effective option, but it's not as popular as the inflatable penile implants.
Okay. So for patients who cannot physically get aroused, especially for the men, there are options. For women who can't get sexually aroused, we need to understand why, and then we treat accordingly. As Elise said, for women, interest and arousal disorder often overlap. For men, it's the other way around. If there's an arousal disorder, it leads to, often leads to an interest decline. It's just, you know what, I can't get it up. It's embarrassing every time that I try and I fail. So I'm rather not going to do it. So for women, the two overlap. For men, it's the other way around. You also have to remember your oral medication for guys. And I think there's a movement in taking a look at this for girls as well. So yeah, you're looking at your Viagras, your Cialis's, all their generics, Levitra, which is not that popular in South Africa, but works quite well. And I'm sure, Elise, that there's no data that say that you women can't use something like Viagra or Cialis to help with blood flow to the...
The papers that I read is that it's not as effective for women as it is for men.
But you could possibly try something like
that. But it. Testosterone is definitely, according to scientific papers, the indication for female. Yeah. Because if you address the interest, desire, arousal with testosterone, the body responds. The arousal happens.
I think what we have to take away from what Elise just said is that treatment modalities should not be limited to just one type. For instance, when it comes to an arousal disorder, you can use your medication, your injectables, your devices like penile pumps and constriction rings and stuff like that.
I didn't know that there's vacuum pumps for females as well. I need to go.
Wait, what's that?
Yes, I want to go and explore
it. It looks like
that.
An oxygen mask, I think, that you put over your vajayjay.
I didn't know that. So, I know a lot, but not that.
It's been you have Darth Cookie. As long as it doesn't breathe, Darth Vader, I'm happy. And then we often combine it with hormone optimization at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know what, I think we also quickly need to chat about then the orgasmic disorders, because here we have treatments available. Elise, will you lead us off with anorgasmia for women?
Yeah, I think one needs to understand, and I did mention it previously, you have your primary orgasmic disorder. Is where a woman have never had an orgasm in her life.
Is it because she hasn't tried, or she's tried and she's failed? Or primary, is it both?
It's both, basically, yeah. It's both. Then you have your secondary orgasmic disorder, is where you had an orgasm but failed to have it now again. And then you have your situational orgasmic disorders, is where you can only reach an orgasm, for instance, via oral sex or masturbation or choking. Then you have your general orgasmic disorders, where it just doesn't happen anymore and it's not related to a situation. You just can't reach an orgasm sometimes. How do we treat it? I go back to the basics. Back to the basics. Know your own body. Know what works for you. Know how to stimulate yourself. Because if you don't know that, you can't communicate to your partner what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And learn what works for you. It's, a learned experience. You need to train that nerves to respond.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about something like this in one of the other shows, where having an orgasm for a woman is a learned response.
Yeah,
and it was interesting that last week when we had Timothy here.
He actually said for men as well.
He actually said that, you know what, orgasm for men, if someone doesn't teach you, or if you don't explore masturbation, you're not going to know how to get an orgasm until, you know what, someone does something that leads to that. It might be your first sexual experience. For most boys, it's an exploration of what is happening down here. And, ooh, this is feeling good. And then suddenly there's a mess. Oh, fuck, what happened now?
Okay, but explain to me wet dreams then. If it's a learned experience, why do teenage boys get wet dreams? Because if there's no stimulation, they just
remember
sleep
to
happens.
To keep everything functioning and healthy, it's nighttime ejaculations is a physiological response.
Okay.
You need to empty out.
Otherwise you get blue balls.
Well, it's more than that. You know what? Your seminal vesicles, your prostate and all of that, that's responsible for making semen. That's the fluid. And the buildup of sperm in the testicles. You'll need release of that. And it's a physiological response. You have a wet dream because the brain is starting to think about sexual stuff. Think about animals. You know what? They're not thinking about sex. And then suddenly, you know what? When they become a little bit more mature, when they go into their puberty years, you know what? They start looking out and start sniffing around the females and they're bullied by the other bigger males. And eventually they start fighting. It's a natural response. Mm-hmm. Treatment modalities that we have available for this, for women, we would think of regenerative medicine, platelet-rich plasma therapy, maybe bioelectrical stimulation, etc. Elise, always encourage the woman to start masturbating, to learn the body. What's sensitive, what's not sensitive.
So would you use bioelectrical stimulation for women as well?
Yes, especially if there's some kind of neurological problem with the nerves in the pelvic
area.
But
not only that, Dr. Mark, it's just to wake up that nerves again if you haven't had stimulation for quite a while.
Yeah.
You need to wake up these. Timothy told me about the chair that he has now. That is absolutely one of the big things in female rejuvenation, mm-hmm. is, it's a chair that the woman sit in, and it stimulates with electrical impulses the pelvic floor. Sure. And that also regenerate nerves, etc.
Well, actually,
and
it regenerates
flow.
All the tissue in that area.
Yeah.
So before we discuss the treatment individually, we quickly take a look at men. When it comes to orgasmic disorders for men, we classify them into three groups. Number one is your premature ejaculation.
And that's the more prevalent one, hey?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
What, premature ejaculation? Yeah.
Premature ejaculation. It's quite common. And most men at some point in their life will maybe have a problem with that, where, you know what, it's like playing hide and seek. 1, 2, 3, radio knock, here I come.
Mok whip, mok to mok dear.
Well, yeah. And you know what, there is treatment available for this. So if we look at medical treatment for this, your antidepressants and specific fluoxetine is used to delay orgasm because it downregulates sensitivity as well as libido.
In our
fluoxetine,
language?
It was for old Prozac.
Oh, okay.
Prozac, Lurian, okay. Lilly fluoxetine, etc., etc. It was those kind of drugs that you would prescribe because it just brings everything down. But what you need to understand, it's also going to suppress your libido, not just the sensitivity of the penis.
But would you take that sort of fairly continuously?
Yeah. You have to.
It's not just before you want to have sex.
So can you understand that suddenly we're putting a patient on an antidepressant, which is going to have an effect not just on the orgasmic side, but all the other side. So, and therefore, again, we need to understand exactly what happens. Then we have retarded ejaculation, and that's where the guys can just go for hours and hours and hours, and eventually they just say, okay, fine, you know what, I'm chafing now, I'm exhausted, I'm out of breath, let's just give it up as a bad job.
Yeah, okay.
And you know what, that's a serious issue. You know what, it's like you're running a marathon, and there's no prize at the end. We also have a condition called retrograde ejaculation.
Yeah.
And that's where you go through all the stages, you achieve orgasm, and you have absolutely nothing to show for it because the semen actually goes back up into the bladder and not out through the urethra.
Why is that a problem?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a problem, but you know what? It will have an issue with fertilization.
Yeah, that I understand.
So I always say to the guys, you know what? The volume of the sperm as you get older, and if you're not trying to conceive, it just makes it easier to clean up. So
they're not prone to infections or anything?
Yeah, I think they must be, Elise. Okay. Because, you know what, although the sperm and semen and the urine should be sterile, I think it might, because of the pH, create a little bit of changes to the bladder and how the bladder responds. You know what, urine is salty, but you know what, the pH can differ. So you can actually change the pH of the urine in the bladder. And we will treat this condition for both men and women most effectively with platelet-rich plasma therapy. Now, I just very quickly want to explain what it is. Platelet-rich plasma therapy has been used for a very long time in medicine. I think the first people who started using it was your sports physicians, where they realized that platelets actually release growth factors. So to illustrate, if I cut myself and I bleed, the tissue is damaged, I damaged some blood vessels, we think about platelets. The main role of platelets is to create a plug over this. So they clump together, they clot, and that's what we think platelets do, but it's so much more than that, because that damaged tissue needs to be repaired. So I've taken a bandage, I've put it the bandage on top of that, mm-hmm. but now the platelets start releasing their growth factors, and it tells the other cells how to replicate, how to rejuvenate, and slowly, slowly you start repairing that. But that's under the stimulation of growth factors. So when we take those growth factors, in other words, I draw your blood, I spin it off in a specific device, mm-hmm. I activate those platelets with certain stuff, and then I inject it back into the compromised tissue. And here it has a cellular response, a rejuvenating, repairing, stimulating response. So when we treat women with anorgasmia, we will inject it into the anterior vaginal wall and around the clitoris. And here it stimulates the production or the repair of the sponge tissue. Remember, I've always said the penis and the clitoris is like a sponge. When the sponge gets damaged, it doesn't work as well, so we don't suck up a lot of water, we don't hold on to that water, and if we have to release the water, we don't release all of it. So there's compromised function. And PRP not only rejuvenates that sponge, but lo and behold, it actually makes the sponge a little bit bigger. Not so much in women, but definitely in men. It rejuvenates blood vessels, so we have better blood flow to that area. We have repair of nerve tissue that's been damaged. So the nerve connection, everything is just working a little bit better. It's like clearing up the static that you have on your radio signal or on your phone line. So everything, the communication is better. So
how long does a procedure like that take? Is it painless or is it painful?
It's very, very comfortable. In our practice, what we do is we use a very strong local anesthetic cream. It's a tiny, tiny little pinprick, and the patients really feel very little discomfort. It's more the fear of someone is coming with a needle at my privates.
How long is the needle?
Tiny, 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 tiny. I think for women it's a little bit more sensitive because the clitoris has, especially the clitoral hood.
It's more concentrated nerves than in the penis. A small surface area comparison with the penis.
It really is a very quick procedure. I think I do a PRP treatment in about 10 minutes. It doesn't, mostly a little bit quicker than that. For Elise, who does the renew shot on our patients, it's a little bit more difficult because I have an appendage that I have to, that I can work with. For Elise, it's an internal appendage. So, you know.
And how long are you out of action for?
No time at all.
No.
So you come in over lunchtime and have it done.
Yes, and you walk out, and you know what? I encourage you to go and create some blood flow in that area. So you can have sex that evening.
Okay.
So, you know what? It's a quick procedure. It really is effective. It's not a mainstream treatment yet. It's been made popular by a phenomenal guy, Dr. Charles Runnels. And you know what? It's something in our practice that we use to great effect for anorgasmia for women, as well as erectile dysfunction for guys, whether it's psychological erectile dysfunction, whether it's nerve damage, et cetera, et cetera. Then we also add the bioelectrical stimulation, and we've spoken about bioelectrical stimulation. It's not connecting a car battery to your willy. It's a device. It's a device that was specifically formulated, that's got scientific studies and FDA approval, for bioelectrical current. In other words, currents that mimics the body's natural electrical communication between cells. It's usually a course of treatments. For the girls, it's usually three of these treatments a month apart. And for guys, usually three to five or six, depending on the severity of a condition and whether we are managing to control the underlying causes. So this is regeneration of the pelvic area. It's not a beautifying thing, although for the guys, you know what we see, a nice increase in girth as well as in length. But we usually combine it with other treatment modalities. A combination here with most probably erectile functioning oral medication, as well as hormonal optimization. And for the women, it's that as well. Now, we're running out of time, and I really want to get through this because I think for women specifically, this is the most important one, and that's your treatment for pain disorders. Mm-hmm. So before I hand over to Elise, I quickly want to run through pain disorders with guys. So there is a condition where the penis has a curve because of connective tissue that forms on the erectile tissue itself, the corpus or cavernosum or spongiosum. And think about taking a piece of pliable wood and I'm bending it. Mm-hmm. And then I take a piece of rigid wood and I nail it onto it.
Ooh.
And so
to the penis. No,
so you have something that can bend and straighten.
Sure.
But I've locked it into place with something that cannot stretch. Mm-hmm. And now I start to try and straighten that that piece of pliable wood. And it's going to get strain and eventually something's going to give. And when that happens for men, it becomes so painful that they lose their erection. So Peyronie's disease is often a problem. And here we have two treatment modalities. The one that I use in my practice is PRP treatment. Mm-hmm. Not only does it lessen the pain, but it can also lessen the curve, giving you back a little bit more length and definitely better blood flow because the blood flow is compromised in that area. And there is medication that dissolves this connective tissue, but it's not freely available in South Africa. A little bit of a tricky treatment to do, but you know what, there really is help for that. And then the last option, the one that we will not go to if we don't have to, is a surgical intervention where we actually go and cut that away. But often there's a little bit a loss in length because of that. Pain disorders in women are far more common. So Elise, I think let's start with the one that we see most often, and that's the vaginal dryness.
Vaginal dryness, exactly. Yeah, so for a quick fix, get yourself a water-based or a silicone-based lubricant or a vaginal moisturizer, and the more you are comfortable and don't have the dryness, the more you will engage, and that is also good for mental health. It's good for hormone stimulation, etc.
There are some specific ones that we use. If you want to know more about them, mm-hmm. call us at the T Clinic on 010-824-1393.
Vaginal dryness, we all know, is because of hormonal changes in the female body. And
quick one.
Yes.
With menopause, would you also like put this under this category? Like, if
absolutely.
Okay.
That is the most prevalent cause of sexual dysfunction in menopausal women is the vaginal dryness. But there's also pharmaceutical products for vaginal dryness that is being or inserted into the vagina, which is estrogen preparations to help with rejuvenation of the mucosa tissue in the vagina.
Can I ask you something? Does vaginal dryness Is it mainly in older women, or does it also happen in younger women?
No, it does happen in younger women. We see that specifically with the girls that's on the contraceptive pills. Okay. They do experience vaginal dryness.
So we need to remember here that when it comes to the hormonal treatments, we have different modalities. We have oral medication that you can take. You have transdermal preparations and transmucosal preparations. So the dermal preparations is either a gel that you put on top of the skin and it works systemically. And then you have your patches also work systemically. But there is a group of women that we tend to forget, and that's women who had cancer. They are still sexually active. And if it was a breast cancer or hormone-related cancer, usually as part of a treatment, their hormones are suppressed. So you put them into a chemical menopause, leading to the signs of menopausal women where vaginal dryness is a big one. And there are preparations that we can use for them, hormone preparations that do not get systemically absorbed out of a vagina, that treat the vaginal mucosa. If we don't treat this condition, these patients start battling with urinary tract infection on a constant basis, pelvic inflammation because of this. So it's treatable even in women who had breast cancer. So we don't want to exclude them. As Elise said, we also have other preparations that women can use if they don't want to use a hormone treatment, either systemically or locally, and that they contain growth factors and peptides and stem cells and lubricants. So, you know what, you'd really, really, really do not have to sit with a dry vagina, no matter what the underlying cause or condition is. There are treatments available for them.
Something very important that we never touch on is vaginal infections. That causes lots of discomfort. And this, now I think about thrush infection, which is a candida fungus. Is it a fungus?
Yes.
Yeah. That needs to be treated. It is so, if it's active, it's very uncomfortable to.
It burns, it itches.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's painful.
Then we can treat that with antibiotics or
antifungals,
the different infections that's
Elise,
available.
Can we just mention there that if a woman has a regular sexual partner and she has a fungal infection, a yeast infection, it's incredibly important that you treat your partner at the same time. Mm. For the guys, it's usually a once-off small little pill that they swallow. For the girls, it can be a little bit more involved. But if you have a yeast infection and you were having unprotected sex, and you do have unprotected sex with your husband, et cetera, we need to treat the husband as well because he's going to keep on reinfecting you. For guys, this is usually completely asymptomatic. But we reinfect one another the whole time.
Yeah. Then basic things like your Kegel exercises, pelvic floor physiotherapy.
Won't you explain that, the Kegel exercises?
Kegel exercises is where you contract your pelvic floor muscles. It's like pinching off a wee. That is, okay. If I can explain that way, it's just you contract and release, and contract and release.
So it's literally, I'm doing them right now, it's trying to pull the area between your vagina or your testicles and your anus. It's pulling it up.
Yes.
So, you know what, that's a brilliant exercise, and you can do them the whole day. I can blow smoke rings because of that.
Thank you for that image, yes.
And then something that I actually have never mentioned, which is very important to know, is where a young woman's hymen, which is her virgin, is so thick that it can't break with penetration. And there's surgery for that. Do you remember the Fentonplasty,
yes.
Dr.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah.
With so the flat plasty?
Fentanplasty is just a word for the procedure. Oh. So where they go and snip the hymen just to relax it so there can happen penetration.
So Elise, while you're talking about that, before I forget, there's a pain condition in men where the foreskin is too tight to pull over the glands. Okay? And, you know, but when you either masturbate or you have intercourse, that movement tears the foreskin and it gets infected and it's sore. And, you know, that is something then that we have to treat with a circumcision.
Sure.
So it's a fairly small procedure, and it's actually something that if we look at prevention of sexually transmitted disease, and here we're specifically thinking of HIV/AIDS, is something that the World Health Organization and medical practitioners would advocate to prevent that. Because if you don't have that skin that can tear, your risk of infection becomes less. Elise, we're running out of time.
Hormone replacement therapy, quickly, we've spoken about this a lot. And then mental health therapy.
Okay. Now, there's other pain conditions. And these we see usually in women. It's your vaginisms.
Yes.
And that's where, because of either trauma or mental issues, and I don't want to call that you're nuts, you know what, there's a block, and this can be because of your education, your religion, et cetera, that when there's an attempt to sexual intercourse, these muscles literally go into spasm, and it is incredibly painful for women. Now, there is a treatment for that, and most women will know about this treatment. They just do it on the opposite side of the face, the opposite side of the body, and this is your neuromodulators, your Botoxes. And I specifically say Botoxes because there's different types of botulinum toxins. That we inject into the muscles of the pelvic area, and it relaxes that muscles, and it's a game changer. So if you have a tight, painful vagina, which is limiting you from having intercourse, you know, but there is a treatment available for that. And specialist aesthetic practitioners and plastic surgeons and gynecologists will be able to do it. It's really effective. We also need to think of the pain conditions in the pelvic area. And here we're thinking about endometriosis, where it becomes painful to have intercourse, your polycystic ovarian diseases, bladder prolapse, cystitis, which is an inflammation or an infection of the bladder, hemorrhoids. For women, the rectal passage is directly behind the vagina. There's a thin membrane, almost, if I want to call it like that. It's more of a membrane.
It's called a septum, yeah.
Yeah, between the rectum and the vagina. And, you know, anything that causes pain in that area needs to be addressed. So for the endometriosis, the polycystic ovarian disease, here we do one or two things. We either put you onto or hormonal contraceptive or some kind of hormonal treatment to regulate the period or to take it away. There's intrauterine devices, something like a Mirena, or that leads to an ovulation where you do not ovulate anymore. So there's that hormonal influence is less. And, you know what, there's also surgery that we can do for it. Ablation of the endometriosis that sits on the bladder or on the ovaries, et cetera, et cetera. And if that treatment is effective, you know what, the pain associated with intercourse and hormonal influences usually goes away. If there's hemorrhoids or cystitis, it can be treated. Well, let's put it this way. Cystitis can be treated with antibiotics. Neurogenic bladder or overactive bladder, where there's incontinence and the bladder is hypersensitive. Here again, we can use your neuromodulators, surgery for the hemorrhoids, et cetera, et cetera. Treatment of pelvic conditions. Now, Simpiwe has given me the lasso 5 minutes
and
ago.
I.
So let's Evil just eye. Recap.
Yes.
When it comes to treatment for sexual dysfunction, cornerstone of treatment is making a diagnosis. According to the diagnosis, now we can identify what possible treatment options and modalities we have available. What is it that we want to treat? And then we choose between hormone optimization or manipulation, oral medication, whether it is your Viagra, Cialis, hormone treatments for women, regenerative medication in the form of PRP, bioelectrical stimulation, peptide therapy for interest and desire disorders, as well as neuromodulators. And in most cases, it's a combination of some of them or even all of them. And I think that, in a nutshell, is treatment of sexual dysfunction.
Yeah.
Okay. It's safe to say that sex is something that is natural. It's essential to maintain healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's a condition that's far more prevalent than what we want to believe. Statistically, 41% and 33% of females and males will battle with this condition. In our experience, it's far higher than that. Communication is key. Speak to your partner and reach out to your healthcare provider. If you are battling with this condition, or if you are seeing the signs and symptoms in yourself or in your partner, there is help with specialist centers like the T-Clinic. You can reach us on 010-824-1393 or follow us on social media, www.theTClinic.com. Until next time, we wish you all the best in health.
That was the T-Health Show, empowering you with knowledge. Download all previous episodes on your favorite podcast platform. The T-Health Show is brought to you by T-Clinic.